Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks a lot for listening today, despite my cold. You probably think you are a pretty good judge of character, don't you? You've lived in the city or hereabouts for a good number of years. You know when to switch subway cars to get away from someone who raises your suspicions or your fear levels. You can tell your newsstand guy is a good person from how he gives you your change, right? But our next guest says, don't be so sure. Mary Ellen O'Toole is a retired FBI profiler and the author now of Dangerous Instincts, How Gut Feelings Betray Us. Mary Ellen, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
So this is about how gut feelings betray us in terms of personal safety?
It's personal safety, yes. It's emotional safety. It's financial safety. It's the 360 degrees comfort zone around you.
On TV shows, FBI profilers can walk into a room and 30 seconds later give a whole analysis of someone's personality based on how their desk is arranged or how they stand. Is that what you used to do?
I was an FBI profiler, and then you can leave out the rest because that's not how we would profile a crime scene or do an assessment, but that's certainly the way it is portrayed on television.
What are some of the main techniques?
Well, what we do is we will look at a crime scene when we're contacted by law enforcement. They'll say, we've got a series of homicides. We don't know who's responsible. Can you give us some help in trying to figure out the type of person that could have committed these crimes? So we'll look at all of the investigative material, including the photographs, the medical examiner's reports. And from all that, we will start to infer personality traits based on how that person committed that crime and how they interacted with the victim and what they did to the victim. And then from that, we can actually give investigators some strategies in terms of this is their personality. This is what we think this person is going to be like when you find them, and this is how you will want to interview them. And when you go to court, this is how you'll want to present the evidence before a jury.
So, for example, to take that down into the realm of our mundane personal lives, what should people look out for when interviewing, let's say, a prospective roommate or making plans with someone through an online dating service?
Well, those are two really good examples, and let's start with the roommate. And obviously, when I wrote the book, I completely understand that most people, unfortunately so, will not run into a serial killer or serial rapist. That's the very extreme on the human continuum of behavior. But if you're going to have a roommate with whom you're spending a great deal of time and your all of your personal belongings and information is going to be available to them, you are going to want to know something about their background, and it goes deeper than just their kind of their job and where they went to school. You also want to know one of the important things is, how did they deal with people in the past, with roommates in the past? What were their problem areas, and how did they correct that? If there was an issue, how was it resolved? What were the specific problems that surfaced? And if you see somebody, for example, that goes through maybe 3 and 4 roommates, that's the kind of information you don't want to just try to explain away. You also want to get a baseline of behavior, and what that means is you don't want to just sit across the table from this prospective roommate because they're going to impression manage. That means they're going to put on a good face for you. You want them to be around other people, and you can observe that. How do they treat other people? Are they short? Are they curt? Are they condescending? Are they mean? Are they indifferent? Because sooner or later, if you live with them, that's how you are going to be treated.
Impulsive, angry, narcissistic, lack empathy, objective. Identify others, see themselves as a victim. All of those things are on your list in the book of people to be wary of if you're looking, for example, for a roommate or a date. Now, listeners, we have a few minutes for phone calls for Mary Ellen O'Toole, retired FBI profiler, author now of Dangerous Instincts, How Gut Feelings Betray Us, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. How do you judge when someone is safe or decent or worth knowing? Do you have a go-to assessment? 212-433-9692. And I guess a lot of what you're saying in this book, Mary Ellen, is that so many of us misinterpret details, even when we think we know what we're looking for.
We do, and it's not because we are not educated, but the possessive and wonderfully attentive, texts you all the time, new boyfriend, you marry that person, and if you've misread that behavior 20 years down the road, this is actually the same person, but you're seeing now an obsessive, jealous, possessive husband. The problem is now you're stuck. So the whole point is to be able to read behavior up front and consider all the explanations and not just focus on one because you're so emotionally involved in the dating situation or whatever the situation is.
Let's take a phone call. Darren on Staten Island, you're on WNYC.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
For the profiler, have you ever been wrong in your assessment of a killer?
Have we ever been wrong? When we do our assessments, there's probably 100 points to the assessment, including age, race, marital status, a whole list of variables and characteristics. So, yes, it's the exception where we are 100% correct because we're dealing with crime scenes, and from the scenes we're gleaning information about a type of person. So it's... We're always missing some variables, yes.
Did you ask for a certain reason, Darren? Darren's gone. Barbara in Connecticut, you're on WNYC. Hello, Barbara.
Hi. I have a current situation where I have a nanny who is 6 months new to me, and she seems like very nice and upstanding person. But we have a very expensive watch that I put on at a certain place in the house, and it is missing now. And I'm just wondering how I should bring it up with her and observe her reaction to see if I would be able to tell if she did take it.
Do you give this kind of advice, Marielle?
I don't really. I stay away from that, and I'll tell you why. Because as a very experienced interviewer, you have to know so much more information about the individual before you can sit down, especially with something so sensitive as this, where you're actually, in a nice way, you're basically going to ask her if she stole the watch. So I shy away from that because I don't think we have enough time on the radio to really get a personality assessment of your nanny and then move into best interview strategies. I think you'll find some very helpful information, though, and dangerous instincts that will help you put together an interview strategy that you're going to feel comfortable with.
Barbara, I'm sorry she couldn't help you more with that right now. Good luck with that situation. Anybody else with advice for Barbara about how to confront a nanny if you think she may have, but don't really know if, she stole your watch. Go to our webpage and post on this segment at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Tell us a few ways we can be better about eliciting information. You know, to take Barbara's question and generalize, how can we make the best use of the time we have interviewing a job applicant in the first place?
If you're in a position where you're looking for information, and you are the one that's going to be doing the interview, your role is going to be as a listener. And most people have a very difficult time being a good listener. They think they're very good, but you within 5 minutes of a conversation, the majority of people start talking right away. So that's the first thing, is to realize that you want information. And here are some other tips. Be careful of not hijacking the interview. And that means by jumping in and starting to take control of the interview too fast. Another, I think, really good strategy is to be very aware that you don't start to become really critical or condescending or negative towards the person. If you do something during an interview and cause the other person not to like you, they are not going to give you information, and yet that happens all the time. Ultimatums are another problem. If you don't tell me this, I have no recourse but to fire you. Ultimatums also cause people to be to shut up and not want to tell you information. Then you have to be aware of what people are doing to cause you to stop asking them questions. I've had people in interviews get down on the ground and start flailing around like a fish. They start to cry. They start to get mad and start to get in your face. That's their way of hijacking the interview. And if that happens, one of the suggestions in the book is to let them do that and then continue on with the interview. And again, keeping yourself very much in control emotionally and on track, but to not let them derail what you're trying to do.
All right. Mary Ellen, we've got exactly 30 seconds left. You've now spent 15 minutes with me on the phone. What can you tell about me from this interview?
I think you have a cold.
You are really perceptive. It's unbelievable. I will put you on my FBI profiler staff any day after that. Mary Ellen O'Toole is a retired FBI profiler and the author now of Dangerous Instincts, How Gut Feelings Betray Us. Thank you very much for joining us.
It was totally my pleasure. Thank you.
And we are collecting advice for Barbara on how to have that conversation on our webpage. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, if you were listening earlier in the hour, you heard us discuss the decision by the Obama administration to overrule its own Food and Drug Administration on Plan B, the morning after contraceptive. The FDA had recommended that this morning after contraceptive be made available to girls 16 and under without a prescription, as it is available to older women without a prescription. But the Obama administration said no, prescription will still be required for 16 and under for Plan B. Just a minute ago, the president made a statement about this. Here it is in response to a reporter's question.
A medication that potentially, if not used properly, could end up having an adverse effect. And I think most parents would probably feel the same way. You know, the expectation here is, I think it's very important to understand that for women, for those over 17, this continues to be something that you can go in and purchase from a drugstore. It has been deemed safe by the FDA. Nobody's challenging that. When it comes to 12-year-olds or 13-year-olds, the question is, can we have confidence that they would potentially use Plan B properly? And her judgment was that there was not enough evidence that this potentially could be used improperly in a way that had adverse health effects on those young people.
President Obama at a news conference just minutes ago explaining why his Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius overruled the FDA's recommendation on Plan B without a prescription for 16 and under. You can continue to watch the president's news conference live on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, where we are streaming live video of the president. I'll talk to you tomorrow, larynx permitting. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.